Well, lights, camera, action, everybody. It's another episode of the Puck and Pod. My name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We're going to talk a lot about movies today, gentlemen. And I think we're going to start off with kind of something we don't normally talk about. We talk about the movies themselves, but we never talk about the directors of the movies. So let's get into it. Who is your favorite directors out there?
I don't think it's much of a question mark for me. I think
M. Night Shyamalan. Yeah.
Yeah, you're so close.
Who's the one who does all of those teen comedies? That's got to be it, right? The guy who does American Pie.
Well, it's Uwe Boll. Come on, yeah, you know
yeah.
this already.
Yeah, right.
He's like known to like make like some of the worst movies ever made. Christopher Nolan, obviously.
Of course.
I talk about his films all the time. Inception, obviously, being my favorite film basically of all time. Funny enough, I consider Tenet to actually be his best directed film. Oppenheimer won him the Academy Award in 2023, or I guess 2024. It came out near the end of 2023. Mm-hmm. But I actually, like I said, in terms of the style of directing and how the movie actually came together, Tenet, in my opinion, is actually his best directed film.
I'll say the one thing that made it, you know, made Inception my favorite of his movies is the fact that I could follow along slightly.
Yeah.
Tenet is one of those movies where you have to watch it like four times before you really understand what's going on. I've only seen it once, so I can't say that I know what's going on quite yet. I need to watch it a few more times. But I have heard that after you watch it a few times, it does become clearer and clearer.
Well, it's the same with Memento, right? Like, I don't think you've ever seen Memento.
I did. I think I saw it once.
Once?
That's Johnny Depp.
No,
that's Donnie Darko.
That's it's Guy Pearce and Carrie Ann Moss.
That's right.
And Joe Pantoliano.
Quick plot reminder.
It's hard to explain other than the fact that the story is told backwards.
Yeah, it's from the end to the beginning.
Yeah. So when he,
I think I have seen.
It's a great movie. And it's inspired a lot of shows too. Like there's an episode of Seinfeld that's inspired by it, where it literally starts at the end and works its way back to the beginning again. It's really funny.
I also, real quick, just wanted to say a couple things. I'm gripping my shoulder a lot because I had physio today and it's very sore. And if anybody sees what looks like hickeys on my neck, it's called cupping.
Is that something you and your wife do?
It's called cupping. Not that that sounds much better, but it's essentially a technique they use where they put a cup on, they squeeze it down like suction, and then they drag your muscles, then they pop it off to release. So it's like to reshape.
I've seen that before.
I just know that last time I had physio and I saw them, I looked in the mirror and I went, oh my God.
Yeah, all these spots.
Like, it's like, for a second, I forgot why they were there. And I'm like, what happened to my neck?
I'm a leopard.
And that's, exactly. Anyway, so just disclaimer, if you're wondering why I'm just spending a lot of time on my shoulder, it's because I just
that
had
to work on. Making it with inanimate objects, right?
So, inanimate objects. Whatever you do in the privacy of your own home, let me tell you. So going back to Christopher Nolan, is there a specific movie of his that you can think of that maybe might be your favorite of his?
I mean, other than Inception for me as well, I would say probably The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Specifically that one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he did The Dark Knight Rises and he did, is there another
Batman
so
Begins.
He did Batman Begins.
Batman Begins.
The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I liked Batman Begins too, but I think Dark Knight probably after Inception. I would probably have to take a, I bet you there's probably others that I don't even realize that he's a director of that may even hit my list. So while you guys, if you have any points to make, I'm going to take a quick look because I'm not 100%
sure. He did, I'm thinking Zack Snyder. Sorry, go on. I was about to say he did 300, but that's Zack Snyder.
No, that's Zack Snyder. His next movie to come out, and it's, you know, it'll be coming out at some point here, is The Odyssey. He's coming out with Matt Damon's going to be in that with him.
Matt Damon.
So that will be, I'm looking forward to seeing that. But he's been focusing on period pieces. Oppenheimer was really good. Dunkirk was really, really good.
I have respect for that. If you can do a good period piece and tell the story the right way. Oppenheimer was a good example of that, where it's like he didn't paint this picture of Oppenheimer being this like great, amazing person.
Yeah.
Very smart person, obviously. Obviously, the story focused a lot on the guilt he felt for what he was doing.
Yep.
But he knew that it had to be done in order to, you know, achieve what they achieved in the war and everything. So there's a lot of kind of roller coaster of emotions when it comes to that movie, you know. Yeah. But he did it the right way for sure.
So getting a quick look at this list from him. He actually hasn't directed that many films, eh?
Yeah, he was just,
it's crazy.
Paul was
so, I actually, now that I've looked at this and realized, I had forgotten, Inception is probably third on this list for me,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
To be honest with you. The first one for me is The Prestige.
Yeah.
Yeah, great movie.
I absolutely love that.
That's another movie I'd like to watch again, because I think I've only seen it one time. And it's probably a thing with Christopher Nolan movies where I feel like I need to watch it a few times. It's not like it was confusing by any means. It's just it felt like it's something I need to watch again to grasp what was really going
on. Yeah, I've seen it probably 20 times. Yeah, for sure. The second one for me actually would be Interstellar.
Oh, yeah.
I prefer Interstellar over Inception. Interstellar's great. A very small margin.
Yeah. I have a thing for space movies.
Yeah,
like,
I do too.
And I think, you know, back in the day, I remember my parents got this, like, big giant projector TV. And so it's like a big screen, right? And I mean, back then it was 50 inches, which is like the size of your garage door at this point when it comes to those TVs. And, I would watch like space movies, and for some reason it felt like space movies needed to be on a big screen to watch it, to get a real feel for it. And I was watching, I would watch like, you know, Mission to Mars or, you know, like other Mars movies, because they took place in space first. And it just felt like I needed to watch them on a big screen. So I've always had a thing for space movies because of that, I think.
I remember the first movie I saw on a big screen TV.
Yeah.
Volcano.
Oh, wow.
With Tommy Lee Jones.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah, I remember that movie.
Jeez.
Yeah. We rented it. It was in 97, and we watched it at my buddy's house, and he had just gotten the big screen TV.
A big projector TV?
One of those giant big ones, yeah. That weighed 900 pounds.
Yeah, like it takes three people to carry it. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say Interstellar, because we were just talking about that. One of those films where I've noticed with some of his films, he really emphasizes the music to carry the feeling of the movie. Like Interstellar, in my personal opinion, was one of the first movies that he focused more on the music than he actually did of the dialogue, because there's scenes near the end of the movie where the music was like forefront. You could barely hear some of what was being said between his daughter Murphy and a few of the other characters.
Yeah.
But like the music was
especially during the transitional period between the coming out of the black hole and then going through that sort of like weird vortex thing, and then finally discovering what was going on, and that sort of then it became silent, you know, that kind of like transition. But yeah, I remember that kind of musical transition. Absolutely.
Oppenheimer had come into that too, at points in the movie, right? So that's why I kind of, Interstellar was the first for me that really stood out.
Absolutely.
Insomnia on this list is 4 for me.
Yeah,
it's right after.
Great movie too, right?
So, Robin Williams, geez, you know, he doesn't get enough credit.
God rest his soul.
He does not get enough credit for his dramatic acting, and I think a lot of comedic actors are actually, or comedians, period, are brilliant dramatic actors, because a lot of them are holding in all that emotion. But like, yeah, they're like Robin Williams. I mean, obviously, he had his, you know, issues that he was dealing with, and you know, it just goes to show, like, that explains why he was such a great actor. But there's a giant list of directors that I'm looking at right now, obviously Christopher Nolan being one of them, but one guy that I think of, and again, I go back to when I was in film school studying like films from the like 50s and 60s and stuff like that. One director in particular that cannot be ignored, and to me, that's Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, yeah.
Before I came to our recording today, my wife was at home watching the Psycho movie, you know, Psycho. And I was watching and I was like, you know, for its time, the directing choices that Hitchcock made in that movie are like none other. You can't find them in any other movies back then.
Sure.
You know, just little things like, you know, there's a shot where, you know, I'm not spoiling anything, this movie came out in the 50s, but there's a shot where she's about to be, you know, slashed in the shower, and he cuts to a shot of the water coming down on the lens. And it's just it's like any other cameraman, any other director, you'd be like, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
But for that story, it works. And he actually cuts to it twice during that scene. Once while she's still alive, and then a second time after she's dead. And it's just the symbolism of it, and like the choices that he makes, the camera movements he makes, the little things like that, that I think he was really... I think people nowadays don't think about those decisions back then, and compare them to the inspirations that they've made for directors nowadays.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, just like those brilliant choices, and it was really cool that I got to watch that movie again tonight and kind of see that and kind of go, yeah, like there's a reason why he was as big as he was. One of my favorite movies of his actually was The Birds.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I don't know if you've seen it, but I've like that movie, it, you know, have you ever been scared of crows before? Because that movie will definitely make you second guess, you know, if they're good animals to be around.
Well, if you got kids that are scared of birds, like making them watch that film, they'll never go near
exactly.
a bird again.
So. Exactly. So, no, and he did an incredible job just of creating something out of, you know, he didn't have to show the birds killing people. He didn't have to show the knife going into the woman's body in Psycho. Like, it just the symbolism and the choices he made to represent that, to allow your imagination to come up with the conclusions yeah. of what's happening. Yep. I think that was the thing that Hitchcock really had above other directors back then. And so that for me, that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why he's one of the best for sure.
Yep.
His monologues were always great too.
Incredible.
I always loved seeing his monologues. Yeah. any director that comes to mind for you, buddy?
Oh yeah, for sure. My top pick, I was looking through these, is none other than Mr. Michael Bay.
Yeah. Nice. Famous for his camera moves.
I was going to say, I was kind of thinking how I wanted to analyze, if there was anything I could analyze as to why I really liked his, like, say, directing style, yeah. as opposed to just looking at the list of movies and going, oh, I love all those movies. I think it's like, for him, with me, it's the fact that, like, a lot of his opening scenes, as an example, they're all like, what's the word I'm looking for, Joe? You know it, and Paul, so do you probably.
Like panoramic almost?
Yeah, yeah, like the
wide format.
The
it's called CinemaScope, FYI.
Like cinematography, I guess, is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And just how it's always of like a landscape.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or it's like, you know, like it's a plane or a helicopter coming in on the city of New York yeah. or something, like from far away.
That establishing
like,
shot.
Establishing like, shot, yeah. exactly.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I really like about his productions, and so it seems, is how extra they are. Like, he spares no expense, right? Yeah. The car
They're
chases.
They're always very large budgets,
the
that's
car
sure.
chases in the Bad Boys movies, or just the destruction that happens in the Transformers, you know. Yeah. The plane crashes and whatnot, and destroying of the ships in Pearl Harbor, you know, just like everything is just big budget, right?
Yeah, there's a
big production.
There's a kind of a thing that Michael Bay is known for, and it's actually two things in particular. One, it's the color that he chooses for the look of the film, and usually it's like you'll notice, like for example, Transformers, it's always kind of an orangey color with the choices that he makes,
yeah.
unless it's nighttime, in which case it's a blue color. And then everything is moving. There's never a steady shot. It's always right. the camera's always moving. Go and watch the movie The Island, which is one of my favorites of yeah. his. The camera's never standing still. It's always All moving. Right. Always
Interesting.
Moving.
Okay.
And that's just a thing that Michael Bay, it's just his way of kind of, it seems like every director has like their own way of telling a story. And in his case, it's like,
yeah.
if the camera's standing still, it's for a reason. But if it's moving, that's typically how he tells the story.
You say that kind of orangey.
Yeah, like the color that he chooses. Like,
it's funny you say that, because I'm looking at this list and I'm thinking Bad Boys and The Rock.
The Rock, yeah, 100%. Yeah. And Transformers, time. They Armageddon. Look the same. And Transformers, they look the same. It's yeah, like the right. same color.
Right.
And I think it's his way of kind of establishing his own universe, right?
Yeah.
Every director, and I think of Tarantino in this scenario, they always try to create their own universe. And it's because that's the story they want to tell within that universe. So by creating a universe, they can create any reality they want, right? Yeah. And I think that's the point of it. And whereas Michael Bay, like I think of The Rock, like that's his universe. That's, you know, the one guy who escaped from The Rock who's still alive, who can help us, you know, solve this problem. And like, it, that makes sense, right? It has to exist within that universe. So.
The Rock was a fortress.
when I think of Michael Bay, did you guys ever watch Robot Chicken at all?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's one skit they have in there, and it's talking about Michael Bay films. And it goes, and it basically starts off, goes, Michael Bay presents explosions. Because he's known for bombastic explosions in a lot of his films, right?
Oh, yeah.
I loved that he brought Transformers to life. I don't know. Funny enough, I don't know that there's any other director that could have actually brought the Transformers to life the way that he did.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think there's other directors that maybe could have maybe created more of a gripping, like, drama action story to it. But you know, Transformers weren't known for that. They were known as being kids' toys that became a cartoon, right? So,
yeah, you know, that's interesting. Like, you think about sort of inanimate objects that they could create a movie out of. And, I mean, they did something with it. And then they created, I mean, a franchise, obviously.
Yeah.
For me, I'm trying to think how far. I saw Transformers 1. I saw Transformers 2. I did not see Transformers 3 and on. I don't believe. Okay. I don't believe.
Dark of the Moon.
Which one was the one that Shia LaBeouf was not in?
The first one was after the third one.
Maybe I did see the Age third of one Extinction, then.
So.
I'm pretty sure I saw the third one then. The second one still had
Megan Fox.
Megan Fox. Yes. Thank you. So the first and second had Megan Fox. I did see those. The third one didn't have Megan Fox. I did see that.
Rosie Huntington-Whiteley.
Yeah, I did see that.
Statham Nash.
And I think after that, I stopped watching.
Jason?
Yeah.
There you
go.
Who's
luckier?
Okay, well, we know who Brandon's guy crush is. I don't want to say this without, like, I don't want to underplay anything. Like, Michael Bay is a great director. He's not my favorite, but I understand why he's your favorite.
Yeah.
And I enjoy his movies. Like, yeah. I wholeheartedly enjoy his movies. And he does a specific genre really well, which, of course, is action, right?
Yeah.
Like I said, The Island is one of my favorites of his. Scarlett Johansson and Ewan McGregor. If you haven't seen it, Brando, I recommend you check it out.
It's really good. I actually was looking at the list, and I have not seen it.
You should see it. It's really good.
At least I don't think so.
It's a movie about clones, specifically.
A very underrated film of his. Pain and Gain with Dwayne Johnson and Mark Wahlberg.
I have seen that one.
Pain and Gain, yes, I have seen that one.
It is.
Yeah.
It's hilarious,
yeah. It's good, actually, yeah. Yeah. Paul, give us another director that you're big on.
I would regularly bring up J.J. Abrams just because, you know, he did do Super 8, which I really liked.
Star Trek.
Did the first two Star Treks. Yeah. I'm going to kind of shy away from him because while I kind of liked the new Star Wars, a lot of people hated the new Star Wars.
Oh, Star Wars.
They feel that he kind of ruined the franchise.
He has to be the only director that's directed Star Trek and Star Wars at the same time.
That's kind of funny.
That's kind of cool.
But I'll probably lean a little bit more towards Steven Spielberg, just based upon the history of films that he's done as one of my favorites. Looking at more recently, Ready Player One was amazing. For anyone that's a gamer out there that loves kind of that genre of looking at like retro kind of stuff, games or movies, that film brought everything.
What director are we talking about?
Spielberg.
Steven Spielberg.
Oh, I didn't know that he directed
Ready Player One.
Yeah. I love the inclusion of pop culture in that movie. I think that's my favorite part.
If you notice, all the pop culture that's included in that are our Steven Spielberg movies.
I did not realize.
Back to the Future.
I did not realize that.
I mean, he produced Back to the Future, but still.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's, like, I could go over however many of these, like 32 films here.
Yeah.
His probably, like, biggest ones were obviously the Indiana Jones films.
Yeah.
E.T. was a big one for him. Jurassic Park. My probably all-time favorite Steven Spielberg is actually a kid's movie. Hook was my
My
favorite.
Ferrari directed that.
And then he's worked with Tom Cruise in a few films, War of the Worlds, Minority Report.
That's a good one.
Yeah, he's... Again, I could go over the rest of them. I don't want to keep going over them.
Yeah.
All of them we do have Remembrance Day Commitment. He did do Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, Remembrance Day, of course, is World War One, but still.
Yeah. That's true.
not that I'm nitpicking, but...
And then, obviously, Jurassic Park, and that brought computer effects to the forefront, those films.
Absolutely, yeah. Brando, how about you? Is there another director that you have in mind?
I was kind of looking here, and I mean, there's quite a...
I mean, there's so many directors that we could sit here and name, obviously, but and it's hard to just pick our favorites out of them.
Robert Zemeckis has quite a bit.
Yep.
I was just about to look up... Oops, that's not the one. This guy, I'd be curious to know how many more of his films that I know than a couple that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm going to see if you guys can name the director if I list you a couple of films. I'm not going to name the big one because it's pretty obvious, but how about... American Gangster.
Keep going.
I'm a big Denzel guy.
Keep going.
Gladiator.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott.
Yep. Yeah.
White Squall. was in there. Did you guys ever see White Squall?
Yes, that's I loved White Squall.
Jeff Bridges. Yep. Yeah,
absolutely.
The original Blade Runner.
That's a Ridley Scott movie, White Squall.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Hannibal, Body of Lies was pretty good. I mean, it was okay.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Martian is the big one.
Oh, yeah.
For me, anyway.
Great movie.
Yeah. It's so funny. Have you seen those YouTube videos where scientists pick apart The Martian? And they talk about, like, what's real and what's not and stuff? I hate when they do that because it's like, you know what? Just let us believe. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Just let us have our moment.
Well,
I mean, okay, it's one thing to, like... It's one thing to when you have something that's way over the top. Like, let's say he takes off his helmet and he can breathe on Mars. Okay, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But, like, you know... Let us have the belief that it's a possibility to grow plants on Mars.
I love that part where he's trying to get the water created, and he's like, he's like, woo, and then it blows up and throws him back. He's like, I didn't account for the air that I'm breathing.
Doesn't he say something along the lines of, like, he goes along the lines of saying something about how some famous scientist said, it's not about learning about how to do something. It's learning how not to do something, right? So you do it a million times, figure out not to do it.
You're thinking of, that's, a, I mean, they use the quote in, like, National Treasure.
I swear to God that was in that movie, like, too, but maybe I'm thinking of something else.
You know, Thomas Edison failed 999 times on trying
to light bulb.
The light bulb, and he said, I didn't fail. I found 999 not ways to, not to make a light bulb.
That's right, yeah. Any others that you want to point out? Other films, I mean?
It's funny because the list that I'm looking at is basically from highest grossing films.
Yeah.
Right? And I think of someone like Jon Favreau, and I wanted to look because I wasn't sure. There's really not that many bangers in here.
Yeah.
But it's just movies that made a lot of money.
Yeah.
A couple of the Iron Mans. Chef was a really big one.
Chef was great.
Elf.
Yeah.
Like, that's probably...
It's got to be his number one when you consider the fact that it's, like, it's... It's everyone's Christmas movie, right? Like, you can't go through Christmas without watching an Elf at least once.
It's our Christmas Eve tradition.
Yeah, yeah. For me, and we'll get into this when it comes to Christmas time, but for me, Christmas Story is my biggest one. I have to watch it every year, but I do watch Elf every year as well.
Yeah.
And Home Alone.
Yeah. Nice. The Santa Claus for us.
Yeah, I love the Santa Claus, too.
Is the must, too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
We're Christmas Vacation every year.
Oh, yeah. That is number one. I don't watch any other Christmas movies until I've at least watched that once.
100%. I've never seen that movie.
Oh, man, you're so missing out. You have to catch it.
Maybe this will be the year.
I've never been more disappointed, Brady.
Maybe this will be the year.
Talk about a director that started off with Bang and has kind of moved up since. And David Fincher, when he started with Alien 3, that was a great film in my personal opinion. But he's just gone up from there. Did Seven, did The Game, did Fight Club, did Panic Room, did The Zodiac, did Benjamin Button, did The Social Network, and then did the remake of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the American version.
Great movie, by the way.
Yeah, like
great
movie. Just, every film that he's done has just gone better and better and
Benjamin
better.
Benjamin Button was an incredible movie, too.
Very cool. Gone Girl was really, really good.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Okay, dude. Yeah. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, that we're talking about with Daniel Craig and Rooney Mara,
yes.
Right? Yeah. I like that
Based
one
on the book series.
I like that one a lot.
Now, one director that so I could easily say Quentin Tarantino is one of my favorite directors, and everybody knows this because I've already mentioned it. So I'm going to skip him for this one. One in particular that I happen to like is Guy Ritchie.
Yeah.
I mean...
I had a feeling that was coming.
Those British, like... Badass movies are so. Snatch is incredible.
I love Snatch.
It's Lock Stock is a great movie. Sherlock Holmes, the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. Right. Incredible. And I heard that they're making another one.
Yep.
It may not be Robert Downey Jr. though, so I don't know if it's a Guy Ritchie specifically, but those movies that he did are really good. Movies are actually another example. Sorry to interrupt, but his movies are another example of having a specific look to them.
Yeah,
He tends to have sort of I don't know how to say it other than he takes the contrast out, or not the contrast, the saturation out of his movies. So they're more, they almost feel black and white, but they're not.
They're like gray scale almost kind of.
It makes you feel like you're in London. You know what I mean? Like that kind of look.
The gloominess, the wet and rainy. Yeah, totally.
It is a director's choice. It's definitely a choice that he makes when he does his movies specifically.
Yeah.
And his movies are all very, really good and really good stories too. So I'm
Well, you talk about stories. Like, did you ever see The Gentleman?
Yeah. Great movie.
So good. Did you see it as well?
I think I tried watching it and I ended up getting busy and then just never went back to it.
Hugh Grant and Matthew McConaughey. Yeah. Colin Farrell.
Hugh Grant, by the way,
Charlie Hunnam's in that movie too, is he?
Yeah. Yes. Hugh Grant, by the way, plays a really good bad guy.
He does in that film.
He's just so. Because, like, that character particularly wasn't evil. Like, he didn't come across as evil, but he was sinister in a way where it's like he acts like an everyman, but he does bad stuff. And it's like, I love that. And actually, yeah, Charlie Dunham, there's a specific scene where he's, like, chasing a guy to get a phone back. Yeah. You know the one I'm talking about? Yeah. And he offers to pay the guy, and the guy's like a thug or whatever. And he's got, like, a bunch of his gangster friends. And he's like, I'll pay you money for the phone. Just give me the phone. And they refuse to do it. And the guy, like, threatens him with a big, big, like, machete. And he's like, fine. So he takes out this gun and starts shooting it. And they're like, oh, crap. He's like, it reminded me of Crocodile Dundee. And he's like, that's not a knife. This is a knife. You know, like that scene. But incredible movie. It's so funny.
Now, he did do one early in his career that could have ruined his career. Do you know which movie that is? He did a movie with his wife at the time, Madonna. Called Swept Away.
Yeah.
It could have ruined him. And luckily, it didn't, because he was able to make subsequent films.
Let me ask you this. Have you seen Madonna in a movie anytime ever after that movie? No, I don't think so.
A League of Their Own?
That was before.
That was before.
It was before.
Yeah.
Swept Away was 2002.
Oh,
yeah.
Shoot.
Yeah. A League of Their Own, by the way, is a great movie.
It is.
Tom Hanks, like, he can do no wrong in my eyes.
Well, I was just about to say, another director that just came up for me, I'm looking at the filmography going, holy crap, and that's Ron Howard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ed TV is one of my favorite Ron Howard movies.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. That's one of those movies I can watch over and over and over again. So good.
Yeah.
So good.
And he's been directing a really long time, actually.
He has. Yeah, he really has. And he's done some great stuff.
Wow, Splash was that early in the 80s.
Crazy, huh?
I didn't realize it was
Ron that Howard's crazy. Not a young guy.
No.
Like, no, for sure.
It's funny because we saw him grow up basically as an actor.
Yeah.
You know, he started as a child on The Andy Griffith Show, and then he was on Happy Days. And
he's the same age as my dad.
Yeah. So it's just funny how that works out. But yeah, he's done some great stuff. You know, Tim Burton.
Yeah, I love Tim Burton.
How many of his movies can you seriously sit there and go, that's not a good movie? You know what I mean?
We're going to watch one of them tomorrow night after the World Series game.
Which movie?
Beetlejuice.
Ah, I love it. The original?
This is a filler.
Oh, yeah, this is a filler. Oh.
We're not supposed
to. No, I know.
Just say we're going to watch him one of his movies tomorrow night after we watch some TV.
That's right, yeah. We might watch one of his movies tomorrow, actually.
Oh, yeah? Which one?
I think we're thinking about watching Beetlejuice.
Oh, right on. That's cool.
Because we haven't seen the second one yet, so we want to watch the first one.
You know,
first,
I haven't seen the second one either. I heard bad things about the second
one. Yeah, I know. I want to check it out anyway, but we want to rewatch the first one first.
Good to know.
Yeah, he did Nightmare Before Christmas. Again, I think we talked about it on a previous episode where I didn't like it as a kid, but love that movie now. Yeah.
The original Batman movie?
The first two, Batman Returns is still probably one of my absolute favorite Batman movies ever made.
I love Dark Knight. I distinctly remember feeling like Danny DeVito was believable as the Penguin because of the way his mouth, you know, how he like always had like spit coming out of his mouth when he talked. For me, I felt like that's a believable trait in that character. And I don't know if that was a choice of his or if that was a choice that they made together to create that in the character. But it was, for me, as a child, that was very believable. Nice. I was afraid of the Penguin.
Now, do you know that Tim Burton did his own remake?
No.
Do you want to know which movie it is?
What?
Frankenweenie.
Okay.
He did one in 1984, and he did a remake in 2012.
Very cool. Very cool. Good for him. You know, I think when it comes to Tim Burton movies, I mean, I think of like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
The one with Johnny Depp. Incredible. And Johnny Depp has been integral in Tim Burton movies, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Oh,
Sleepy Hollow.
Sleepy Hollow.
Sweeney Todd.
Yep.
Edward Scissorhands. Absolutely.
Edward Scissorhands is probably maybe number one when it comes down to it. I mean, that's one of his best movies.
Yeah, good. Great film, actually. Mm-hmm. That one's a bit of an underrated one. If people haven't seen it, you want to see Johnny Depp probably at his best in terms of the type of character that he's playing. Edward Scissorhands is the one to watch, and Tim Burton.
I mean, there's a lot of characters that Johnny Depp has played where you classify him as one of the best character actors there is.
Yeah.
Edward Scissorhands is probably the beginning for him when it comes to the evolution of his career. Like yeah. he, the first time he played a, like yeah. a character, yeah. you know? Yeah. So there's the incredible movies by Tim Burton. I just saw recently a Wes Anderson movie. and that is One Battle After Another with, I almost said Johnny Depp with,
Leonardo DiCaprio,
yeah. Thank you. Really good movie. Really good story. It's a bit of a slower movie.
I was going to say, I heard that it got...
But like, visually, it's a great movie. Stuff. Yeah. It's a visually great movie. I think it actually doesn't have bad... I think it's got good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, if I remember correctly. Right. I think it's got good fan reviews. It might have bad critic reviews, but I loved it. Faye and I both loved it. One specific thing I liked about it was his visual choice, like his choices for visuals in terms of the way the story was told. There's a specific car chase scene, for example, where he chose to have the camera low to the ground, kind of like on a camera car, but low to the ground, and you're getting kind of a lower perspective of the car that you're following, like the main character's driving, and they're on this hilly, kind of hilly road, and so the camera basically sees this hill, and then all of a sudden comes to the top of the hill, and it reveals this horizon, and then there's the car you're chasing, like way far in the distance, and it kind of follows right. along. It's really kind of cool. I was watching, I was like, that's a really interesting choice. and yeah, so that, for me, that's a director's choice. That's Wes Anderson going, this is how I want this film to look.
Right.
You know, it's just, he's got a lot of different kind of films where he has a look to his films, and you can usually tell that it's a Wes Anderson film. For me, I felt like this movie in particular was not the same as all the others. It felt different.
You could probably say the same about the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
That they have a certain feel to their movies. Like,
they do.
No Country for Old Men, for me, had... Again, it's unexpected twists and turns in the movie that you're not expecting. Like, a main character just gone that you're not expecting. True Grit did that, too. Burn After Reading did that. Like, Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? Like, again, characters that you were thinking were integral to the film, but they're actually not. They're just a side piece. There's another focus in it.
Yeah. But the cool thing about their movies, most of their movies, they write and direct.
Yeah.
So they're telling their own story, which is really important, I think. Because if somebody else directs it, then they may not feel that they're getting the right story, right? Right. Yeah. And the other part of it too is of course the actors that are in the films too. They're portraying the characters the right way. I think of like, you know, people like George Clooney and Brad Pitt, who when they're in those movies, you're thinking they're going to be one thing, and then they end up being something completely different. And I love that. So you know, for them, it's all about the story, but they also have a look to their films as well. And I think of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, where it feels like it's more of a yellow type color that they follow along.
Yeah,
and actually, probably same as like No Country for Old Men, where it has that sort of neutral color feel.
Oh, definitely.
So it is a choice, you know, when it comes to like what they decide to go with.
He makes one of your favorite movies too, with Jeff Bridges.
Big
Lebowski.
Big Lebowski.
Wonderful.
But yeah, no, I absolutely love the Coen brothers and what they have done in the film industry. Specifically, Joel Coen, I believe, is the director of the two of them. I think Ethan Moore writes than he directs. However, I know they do direct together a lot of times too. Another one I was kind of obviously leaning on was Quentin Tarantino. For me, I absolutely love his storytelling. I also love 100%. His visuals. Just the way he presents a film. He does things in ways, like he pays homage to a lot of the filmmakers that he grew up watching.
Yeah.
He watched a lot of like Japanese films growing up, and so he pays homage to them a lot. And like older films too, like Grindhouse films and stuff like that. Well, where he kind of pays
homage. The Grindhouse films were his homage to that period too.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
Did you ever see Planet Terror or Death Proof at all?
So
no.
It was Planet Terror was actually Robert Rodriguez's film, correct?
Yeah, but he had...
But he directed it.
Yeah, Tarantino had a major hand in it.
Now, I'm trying to remember. I know they did him together. They worked together, and they're like best buds. Of course they did. But if I remember correctly, was it... Robert Rodriguez directed his movie, and he directed Robert Rodriguez's movie?
I might have been how
something
went.
Like that.
They both had hand in hand in the movie, because they're when you think of the Grindhouse movies, you actually do have to put them together because they're basically one feature. It'd be the same idea like back in like the 60s, even where they had kind of an intermission in between films. the idea of the Grindhouse was that you saw that you're watching the first film, you watched maybe kind of like this made up trailer of movies that they did in between, had a kind of an intermission that was happening, and then went straight into the next film. And the idea was that you're kind of at the movie theater watching these films.
These Grindhouse films. It's actually really interesting idea. I mean, people knew what they were going into when they went to watch these movies, so it wasn't like a surprise for them, but kind of fun. Something fun for people to kind of come
and see. Well, give Tarantino credit for kind of bringing his A-game before the Grindhouse films. Like, the Kill Bill movies, you want to talk about, like, gore and action to the extreme, those movies were perfect for that.
The cool thing about it, though, is that, like, you could look at a director who has a bunch of gore in their movies, and you might think, oh, there's no need for that, you know? Yeah. Whereas with his movies, it almost feels like it has to be this way.
Absolutely.
To complete the story, right? Like, there's aspects to it where you're like, okay, it has to be. With Kill Bill, one interesting fact is there's a fight scene when he's about to fight, or she is about to fight Oren Ishii near the end of the movie. They cut to black and white.
Yeah.
So one really interesting thing that happens is she blinks and it cuts to black and white. She blinks again and it cuts back to color. That was a decision that Tarantino made. But the reason why it went to black and white is because he was told it has to happen. Otherwise, their rating goes from this to this.
Because
of all the blood, right? Because of all the blood and gore. So they cut to black and white to sort of eliminate that gore. Right. Yeah. And what's funny is after it cuts to color again, the cuts to a wide shot of everybody who's like lost limbs and everything. And they're all on the floor and they're all groaning and moaning. And somebody goes to pick up their arm and she's like, do not pick up that arm. Everything I've cut off belongs to me now. It's just little subtle nuances in his movies that I absolutely love. And the decision to kind of like just that idea of blinking your eyes and having it switch to black and white. Just such an interesting thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think those are the things that I love about Tarantino, those just little decisions that are, you would call them subtle, but I think they're very obvious, you know, in a lot of ways too.
You know, so. I tell you guys, for 37 years of my life, I thought that I was a movie buff. You have proven me wrong. Knocked me back a couple steps.
There are people I know who are that much more movie buffs than even I am, in terms of what they want. Like my buddy Todd Jones, he's a huge Tarantino fan. He's an even bigger Robert Rodriguez fan. He introduced me to Donna, or what is it called?
From
Dusk Till Dawn. Sorry, yeah. He showed it to me for the first time and I was like blown away. And he showed me what it was that he appreciated about it. And I think that led me down that path as well. So when it comes to those movies, and I think this is typically what we talk about when we look for movies is like, what do we appreciate about the movies? And for me, like I will literally watch a movie and I'll ask the question, was I entertained? And typically if I say yes, then I liked the movie. Most people, like I know you've said there's certain movies you haven't liked, and I would disagree and say, well, I was entertained, so I liked it. However, there are certain movies where I have a specific reason behind being entertained by it, and like I think of Tarantino for that reason, you know, I think of the director's choices for that reason and things like that. And for me also, like when it comes down to it, I think of like the way the cinematographer decided to go with a certain lens or something like that. Like, you know, The Hateful Eight, another Tarantino movie, it was entirely shot, well, not entirely, but it was a majority shot in CinemaScope, which is that widescreen format. Kind of like Lawrence of Arabia, you know, that old school movie where it's like super wide. He did that on purpose because he wanted to create that sort of Western feel, right? And I think he did that.
One director that I was happy when he finally won his first Oscar, Martin Scorsese.
Yeah.
The guy's done nothing but bangers his entire career.
Yeah.
The Departed was...
You said it wrong. It's The Departed.
The Departed.
The Departed.
The Departed.
Sorry.
Just kidding.
I don't like that accent.
Come on.
The Boston accent.
But yeah, like it took like 30 years for him to get his first Oscar. And he still has done great films since The Departed. He did Shutter Island.
Yeah.
He did Hugo. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's a Christmas film. It's a great, great movie. Wolf on Wall Street.
Incredible movie.
Yeah.
Which one did he win the Oscar with? Was that Wolf of Wall Street?
Well, he won Best Director for Departed.
Right.
I think Shutter Island got nominated, but I don't think it actually won.
No.
Wolf of Wall Street, yeah, I think...
for some reason, that stands out to me. But maybe
I think he won Best Picture for
Wolf. Maybe it was Leo that won the Oscar for that one.
No, Leo won for The Revenant.
Oh yeah, right. Revenant was incredible. I know that's not. I know that's not Scorsese, but still.
But,
that's Aronofsky, isn't it? Aronofsky.
No.
Who did that one?
I have no idea.
Put you on the spot.
Great thing about the internet, right? Yeah. You can actually look the stuff up. So
I thought it was Aronofsky. Special shout out to a specific director when we're done.
No, Inarritu. Alejandro Gonzalez Inarritu.
Okay.
Inarritu.
I stand corrected. I could have swore it was Aronofsky. Maybe, I know Aronofsky did Black Swan, but...
that's true, yeah. Yeah. He did a good job with that,
too. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Like I said, I could go on for the whole podcast about Scorsese, but...
We have.
Let's talk about others.
Well, let me give my special shout-out. The director, and I think this. I mean, he's not up and coming or anything like that. Like, he's been directing for a long, long time. Sam Mendes, he directed 1917. For him specifically, the success of that movie was not just him, but he did write the movie as well as direct it. And that movie's incredible. I've seen it. Has to be 150 times. Has to be.
Guess which debut film he did that won in Best Picture?
Debut film, like his first film. I don't remember.
Has Kevin Spacey in it?
Yeah.
Mina Savari?
What is it called?
American Beauty.
American Beauty. Yeah, American Beauty. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
crazy to have that as your debut film and win Best Picture for it.
Yeah.
It does help to have the cast you have, right? Yep. I mean, yeah, incredible. Incredible. Like, but you know, for me, 1917 has got to be his best film.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, there's a reason why it won the awards it won. Mm-hmm. Best cinematography specifically. It's just incredible. The idea of going with one shot, and again, constant moving camera, right? The camera didn't stop moving until the very last shot, which is when he's laying down in the tree, which is exactly the same way the film began. So just kind of a cool way to tell the story.
Full circle.
Yeah.
Tell me if you guys agree with this, because based upon, there's multiple films of this franchise, but I consider the Wachowski sisters, unfortunately not brothers.
Both? Both have transitioned?
Both have transitioned.
I knew one did. I didn't realize about that.
I'd say they're one-hit wonders with the first Matrix. The other two were okay afterwards, but I'd say that the is groundbreaking, the first one. The most recent one, Resurrection, was hard to get through.
Yeah. Disappointed in that.
Yeah, sure. Anything past the first one. You should, if you ever want to watch the trilogy, you should watch the rest of it, but you're not missing too much if you only ever watch the first one, too. So.
Yeah, yeah. So we are looking at 43 minutes in. We could get into maybe talking a little bit about movies in particular. We were discussing the idea of talking about musicals. I remember as a child, going back obviously years and years now, I'm an old man, Grease was probably the first musical that I ever saw.
Yeah.
But it's also probably one of my favorites too.
Yeah.
And I mean, I was, you know, it helped introduce me to what's his name?
John Travolta?
No. The Four Seasons.
Frankie Valli.
Frankie Valli, thank you. Because Frankie Valli sings the intro song. Grease is the word.
Yeah.
Just love that song, first of all. But like, just it introduced me. It starts you off with singing along to the intro song. And then the actual movie itself is nothing but like singing and dancing and having fun. But you don't think of it as kind of a musical. Like, I watched that movie, and I don't think of it as a musical. Yeah, I still am interested in
my favorite one on the list when we get to it, I feel the same way about.
Yeah. Like, it just, you know, every song is something I felt like I could sing along to. You know, the first song you hear in that, I mean, other than the intro song, of course, is Summer Nights, right? And you're dancing along, singing along to the song, and then it tells a story with what's actually happened in the movie. And I mean, obviously, I know they're all based on plays and whatnot, but still, like, it just, you know, the way they did it, the way the actors were portraying the characters, it didn't feel like I was watching, you know, a musical theater play. I felt like I was watching a movie. And I think that's the thing you want to achieve if you're creating a musical movie, to keep it as a movie and still feel that way.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, I, when it comes to musicals, I've always liked some of the adaptations from Broadway to movies, obviously. Andrew Lloyd Webber was really well known for obviously doing a bunch of musicals back in the day.
That's right.
One musical that he did that did not translate well to a movie was Cats. It's still one of my favorite songs, which is Memories. It's an absolutely banger of a song.
Was it Taylor Swift in that?
I don't remember.
I think she played one of the cats in the movie.
Honestly, Joe, I try to forget that film. but when I'm looking at one that was a major success, and it certainly helped launch careers, was The Phantom of the Opera. Mm-hmm. Gerard Butler was fantastic as the Phantom. Emmy Rossum, I had no idea I could sing like that after having seen her in the day after
tomorrow. Emmy Rossum, you mean? Yeah.
Rossum,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. My apologies. She was in Shameless.
Yeah.
She played Fiona in Shameless.
Yeah. Yeah. She gave her all in one movie and certainly
she's took, honestly took it all though, off. Like super talented actor. Like super, super talented actor. Like
she's
incredible.
Very talented.
Yeah.
Oh, well, oh, well, oh, well,
tell me more, tell me more.
My favorite,
yeah.
I actually told you guys earlier that it was The Greatest Showman, and it's looking at this list now, I don't know why I didn't think of it,
yeah.
So I'm going to switch it up because I do really like The Greatest Showman. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's really, really up there for me. And I saw that one before I saw Grease, I think, too.
Yeah.
So
the problem for me with that movie was that I was comparing it a lot to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory by Tim Burton. Thank you. My brain does not work today. comparing it to that movie, not expecting a musical.
Did you not see Willy Wonka first?
No.
Oh,
yeah.
I was going to say, how is that possible?
Yeah, like I saw as a child, I saw Charlie and the Chocolate Factory with
Freddie Heimer?
No.
Oh,
yeah, I mean, from the
Martin
70s.
Martin something.
Are you talking Gene Wilder?
Gene Wilder.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about, and it's Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka.
Sorry, it's Willy Wonka. That's
yes,
the one I'm talking about.
I did see that one. You're right. So, but I don't remember it as a musical.
Right.
And that's my thing, right?
Right.
Like, I know the Oompa Loompa sang, but, like, it does, I don't count it in that area. And in this movie, the new one with Timothy Chalamet, I know that he sings in that movie.
Yeah. Right.
So that's why.
The opening song in Willy Wonka is actually an adaptation from an old Rat Pack member.
Right. You know what? Now that I think about it,
who can take a sunrise?
That's right. the other one is, and you'll see the world. I don't remember all the words. And I don't want to get a copyright strike. But
I never thought that I could be.
Apparently Brandon's not worried about a copyright strike.
I got a golden ticket.
But yeah, absolutely. It definitely, I mean, Gene Wilder was incredible. I mean,
There,
even at the end, you know, the scene where he's like, where he tries to take it away from them and he's like, you lose. Like that's, he actually scared me in that when I saw that. You know, I was like, "Whoa!"
Yeah.
I thought he was supposed to be the
He's
super
freaking out here.
Guy.
What's going
yeah.
on?
Yeah, definitely. But and it's definitely a different
you
direction.
You get nothing.
Yeah, you get nothing. You lose. But yeah, absolutely incredible, incredible movie for sure. I just, you know, it's funny. Like, I look back at that movie and I don't think musical.
That's what I was saying. Yeah,
yeah.
When you said that, you don't think that Grease was really a musical either.
Exactly.
I think back to this one now and I go, yeah.
It makes
never
sense.
Never really thought about it that
it
way.
It totally
but, yeah.
makes sense. Brandon's got some questions to ask us,
yeah,
and I'm really curious.
I thought it'd be kind of cool. So what? I'll ask you guys, I'll make a statement, okay? And basically, I want you to come up with a percentage
yep.
that you think that statement is true.
Okay.
And maybe give me just like a quick synopsis as to why you think that you came up with that percentage.
So it's like Price is Right without going over.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. And I mean, I'm curious to see if there's much difference between
yeah.
you guys. So I've got some sports ones, mostly hockey because that's just what we do.
Yeah.
And then I've got some movie ones. I'm going to try to kind of interchange them.
Okay.
So the first one I'll go with is percentage that McDavid gets 50 goals this season after a slow start.
I will go with 57%.
57%.
So up on the higher end of 50%.
So not super confident, but you think that there's...
I mean, it's McDavid.
More likely chance
yeah.
that it'll happen than
yeah.
not.
Based upon how the team's kind of doing so far, kind of could change it around. I'll go lower. I'll go 33%.
Okay.
So not That's very just because he's a Flames fan.
Not very confident.
That, well, that plays a part for sure. But yeah, for him, I think there's got to be some rust in the wheels at some point for him. Like, he's obviously, as we've talked about, the best player in the, in the world. But, you know, everyone has a down season. Maybe this is his year.
It's also about who he's playing with too, right?
Yeah.
And if his teammates or line mates are having a down year as well, it could affect him in the long run too.
Yeah. Okay. A remake of The Bodyguard has been rumored. Percentage that the female lead will be Taylor Swift.
Oh, no. I'm going to go like 10%.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because you can't see it or because you just don't think it's going to happen?
I don't think it's going to happen.
Whitney Houston was too iconic.
Yeah. And she was an actress too. Like, she actually was an actress. So Taylor, I can't see her doing that.
The rumor right now is that she's the top candidate.
Okay, well, I don't think the movie's going to do well. Personally, I actually believe it could hurt her career.
Yeah.
I'll even go that far.
I mean, maybe. Yeah, maybe.
I'll even go that far.
Okay. The Odyssey turns out to be the most successful movie in Christopher Nolan's career.
I'll admit I don't know anything about it. Like, I haven't seen trailers or even read a plot or anything. So it's a gamble for me to guess. I will guess 50%, which is literally a safe bet.
Literally a cop-out.
Literally. No, it is, though. It is a cop-out.
Well, Odyssey is considered one of the greatest books of all time. And if he's...
I don't know anything about it. Yeah.
In my opinion, he's probably one of the best directors of all time. So again, I'll go on the high end. I think it'll be probably 75%.
75%. Okay, so. Less than
you think Matthews is going to get. All right.
I'll see if I can get this
right. So you like Matthews more than you like Nolan. All right. Yeah. I got you.
I'll see if I can get this right because there is a difference. Elias Pettersson gets 100 points.
This year, honestly, I don't think it happens. I'm going to say 50%.
5%.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
No, I mean, there is a chance, but he's going to have to get hot.
Like Jim Carrey kind of chance?
Yeah. So you're telling me there's a chance. I honestly think, like, it probably, he'll finish somewhere around the 70% mark, in my opinion, but that'd be great if he could.
Will Robert Downey Jr. make a cameo appearance in Avengers Doomsday?
I heard a rumor that he will. I heard a rumor. So I'll go 60%.
He's 100%. He's playing like the main...
Sorry. Let me rephrase. Robert Downey Jr. will make a cameo appearance as Iron Man.
Iron Man.
Oh. There we go.
Okay, I'll let Paul answer first.
Very good point.
I'll still say 100% because it is based upon the multiverse. And Secret Wars is the movie they're doing after Doomsday, which is based upon the multiverse. So I'm going to say 100% for that.
Secret Wars, from what I understand, in Deadpool and Wolverine, Secret Wars is the comic book that's on the ground with Deadpool when he gets hit. When him and Wolverine go to that that world, they're fighting and he ends up on the ground.
The Void.
Secret World is the comic book that's on the ground.
Secret Wars is actually Secret Wars, pardon me.
Yeah.
There's a character called the Beyonder that's in the comics that is a major influence in that. Probably not going to be in the films, but the Void is where
pretty cool. You got time for a couple more, Brandon.
Okay, Alexander Barkov ends up playing more than 40 games in the regular season. More than 40 games.
I'm going to go pessimist. I'm going to say 30%.
Okay.
I don't know the extent of his injury, so 50.
So the reason why I'm going so low is because I think that he may come back, but I think he's going to get injured again.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, all right. Avatar, Fire and Ash will be the highest grossing film of 2026.
Got to remember what else is coming out in 2026.
Yeah, there's lots.
I don't think the last Avatar did that great.
Yeah, Way of Water was... It was good. I don't think it was great.
Yeah. So. I thought it was just a continuation from what you saw in the first film.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a special, like, big movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll go low. I'll say 30%.
Yeah, based on even the success of Way of Water, probably 30%. I'm around that too.
How many more I got, Joe?
You got time for like two more.
Two? All right. What I will do is I will do a movie one again, and then I'll end with a big one.
Perfect.
The upcoming Street Fighter film grosses more than $500 million worldwide.
I didn't know there was a Street Fighter film coming out. That's cool.
Yeah.
Grosses more than what, sorry?
$500 million worldwide. Let's say through a calendar year. Obviously, it's not going to happen in
yeah,
the weekend.
But... it's going to take a while.
It's going to have Rena Vallandigham in it. She was in the Cobra Kai series in the final season.
Right.
She's playing, I can't remember the character, but she's playing an integral character. I liked her a lot, and she's a 13-time
she's going to be Chun-Li, isn't she?
Martial arts champion. Chun-Li, she's not Chun-Li.
Cammy? Probably Cammy.
Might be Cammy. I can't remember the character, but I really like her. I don't know if it's going to gross $500 million because the last Street Fighter film, not the Jean-Claude one, the one they had in between with Kristen Krajicek.
There was one in between?
There was.
Oh, wow.
it was absolutely awful. I don't know that there's as big of an audience for Street Fighter as there is Mortal Kombat, so I'm going to say no. So probably on the 25%.
Honestly, it really depends on the story. It really does. It depends on what the trailer gives us because... you know, the Mortal Kombat movies have been really good, the recent ones, the newer ones. They've been really good and entertaining, and the graphics and visual effects are really wonderful, and I think that's important. I think we live in an age right now where those films can be good because of what they're capable of giving us. So it really depends on the trailer. I think I'm just going to be the optimist, and I'll say 50%. But $500 million is a lot of money for a film to gross.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah. Okay, last one. Team Canada takes gold in men's hockey at the Winter Olympics.
I want to say with all certainty 100%, but obviously you have to, you know, there's lots of talent out there. So Team Canada lover, we're all from Canada, so 95%.
I'm going to be a realist. I'm going to be a realist. I'll say 50%. I think U.S. and Canada are going to be the top two teams, but I think U.S. will have a real good chance of winning the whole thing.
All right.
I mean, with the goaltending they're going to have, pretty incredible.
Yep. That's true.
Yeah.
Nice.
I took a 5%.
Like I said, I'm a realist. But no, I think those are some pretty interesting questions. Maybe we'll have to hang on to that again for another episode so we can ask some more because there's obviously we're always going to have difference of an opinion on certain things, and it'll be interesting to see. It would be cool to revisit this even after, say, like that Mortal Kombat or that Street Fighter movie comes out and sort of see what it ended up with after the fact. But gentlemen, another episode come
that's
and gone.
It, eh?
Hopefully, you guys had a good time talking movies and talking musicals and directors and.
You know what? Honestly, I can be a passenger when we talk like deep dive on movies because I just enjoy watching the passion that you guys have.
Yeah,
like I like my movies, but I don't nearly watch them and get the same thing out of them that you do, and it's amazing to watch you guys, and I commend you because you have a different way, like a different perspective on it, and it's helping me have that same perspective or that approach.
The understanding, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, I wish you could feel what I feel when I hear the Superman theme song at the beginning of the Superman Returns movie, for example. When I saw that in theaters, the goosebumps I got just hearing, bah, 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 just that feeling because I grew up such a Superman fan, you know, like I could go on forever about it. But yeah, I wish you could feel what I feel when it comes down to that stuff. And maybe one day you will. Maybe. We'll see. Well, thank you guys again for watching another episode of the Puck and Pod. I want to thank you all again for watching. If you guys have comments or anything like that, you want to reach out to us, we are available on social media at the Puck and Pod. So reach out to us. Let us know what you want us to talk about. Or if you want a shout out, let us know. We'll definitely be happy to do that for you. Once again, for the Puck and Pod, my name is Joe.
My name is Brandon.
And I'm Paul.
We'll see you guys on the next one.